Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Hit that subscribe or follow button while you're here. Leave a rate and review. At this point, I'm releasing episodes as I finish them, as I'm emotionally and mentally ready to spend the studio time necessary to put everything together. So have those notifications on for when I post a new episode. Before we get to my conversation with businessman and podcaster Corey Nathan, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Corey Nathan and I both live in Santa Clarita, California. He was born in New York, but raised on the Jersey side. He's been in SoCal, though, since 1995, so practically native, right? Over the years, he's worn a lot of hats, stockbroker, theater guy, independent film. He's a partner in the team-building firm Nathan, McDowell, and Rose. But what drew me to Corey was his podcasting. He hosts two podcasts. The first is Trailer Geeks and Teaser Gods, going behind the scenes of the trailers that go viral on social media. But much of our conversation centered around Corey's newest podcast, Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other. I'm actually his guest on the latest episode of TPNR. I'll link that in the show notes. And since Corey and I are pretty much neighbors, can't wait to go grab a beer, buddy.
I've spent more years here now than on the East Coast.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think I might have just passed that milestone because I was about 24. Yeah, I was about 24 and a half. It was right about this time of year that we got out here.
How did you end up picking Santa Clarita of all places?
We kept on moving out further and further. We started out in Santa Monica, and we had a, we had an apartment that was smaller than this screen. and we already had two dogs at that point. So let's see. After a year, we moved out to Woodland Hills into a two-bedroom apartment.
Oh, that didn't take much time at all. Wow.
No.
A year in Santa Monica, you're like, you know what? This beach thing is kind of cool, and We're done.
Yeah. So what happened was my first year, this is why it really happened. My first year, I was a messenger in LA, and there was a trip that I was taking and it was a Friday afternoon. And I didn't go by the Thomas Guide. I was one of those AAA maps. I wanted to see the big picture.
Yeah. You had to pick back in the day. You had to pick one or the other. You either walked into AAA and grabbed what they had, or you had
AAA
a Thomas
maps.
Guide.
I had to go to AAA. To get a new map because it wasn't Simi Valley. It wasn't San Fernando. It was above that. So I called my girlfriend at the time and I said, Lee, I'm going to this place called Santa Clarita. It looks like I'm going to basically Oregon Friday afternoon. You want to come with me? And it took us 40 minutes, 35 minutes. Back then the traffic was less than it was now, but and we ended up on a cul-de-sac in Stevenson Ranch. The beginning of Weeds, that the show.
Yeah.
It was like picture perfect. I looked over at my girlfriend and she just had this look in her eyes. She saw the kids playing kickball in the cul-de-sac and she's like,
she was sold.
We are moving out here.
She was sold. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a shark who tasted blood in the water.
So before you even got out to Santa Monica, let's go back, because your New York days, a lot of that had nothing to do with what you're doing out in LA now.
I always had this combination of business and the arts. So I started out in New York. I was a theater rat in New York. But I went to this theater conservatory at night, and the way I put myself through it, I got a job as a stockbroker. So I was, I was doing the Bud Fox thing during the day.
As one is wont to do in the 80s and 90s, right? Right.
Yeah. So I always had both of those elements in play. And I started producing theater in New York, moved out here to produce independent film. I continued producing theater. But, I always had an element of those ingredients in the mix. I had a business for about 20 years that kind of grew out of my producing, because the thing I was really good at was putting teams together. So the shorthand way of referring to what my business became is headhunting. Mm-hmm. I headhunted with a specialty in entertainment advertising. And, you know, but I never lost my bug. I continued producing theater over the course of those years. And 2 years ago, this idea emerged. I started listening to podcasts and I immediately fell in love with the medium. And a few people started talking about doing my first program, which is Trailer Geeks and Teaser Gods. And I just love the idea, partly because I thought it was important to tell the story of the actual industry, the trailer, the people who make the coming attractions, because that story has never been told. Most people don't even know that industry exists. And to, you know, celebrate these brilliant people, creative people. But in the process of doing this, which we still do, we have weekly episodes on that one. Shameless plug, I guess.
No, but we're in the podcast industry. There is nothing shameless about it. Bring it on.
Are we going to start smoking weed now and bring in the process of making that, I didn't just fall in love with it from a consumer standpoint. I fell in love with it the way I was in love in the, you know, off Broadway days, where it didn't matter if I was in those days, I didn't care if I was on stage, if I was directing, if one of my pieces that I wrote was on, or it literally, if I was sweeping a stage and cleaning the bathrooms, I just wanted to be around it. I wanted to like be a part of this team that would breathe life into great literature and enjoy it with a community of people. You know, and doing podcasts is very much the same thing. Like, you know, I might be editing, I might be doing some research for an interview I'm doing, I might be doing this, editing. I learned how to edit for the first time. I've been around editors my whole life, but I've never actually learned how to do it. Social media, like, I don't know TikTok, but I had to like learn all these different platforms to, you know, let a potential audience know about some of the work that we're doing, depending on what program it is. So I've just fallen in love with the medium and every aspect of it.
Yeah, I've just kind of getting back into things after taking 2020 off from all things social media. And, you know, I was just teaching and taking care of things at home and reconnecting with my wife and my daughters. And
how are they doing? Yeah, how is,
you know, they're doing okay. I feel like, honestly, since my wife passed, they are actually doing a little bit better than I am, honestly.
Oh.
You know, I was just talking to somebody about this earlier today, the idea of like they're my medicine, you know, and they actually, and it hits me every time I think about it. Like I have no problem telling them that I'm sad or I'm not having a good day, or like just this morning I was working on hanging a shelf. That shouldn't be that big a deal. But I made it harder than it needed to be, and I got all frustrated, and I started to get all snappy. And I know you asked about the girls, and of course I'm talking about me because that's what I do. But long story short is they just comforted me, and I always thought, okay, well I'm gonna comfort them, and then I'll seek comfort in, you know, sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law, my parents, you know, things like that. And no, it's a two-way street. It's totally a two-way street. So they're doing okay. I appreciate your asking. And you know, all things considered.
Yeah.
You know, my 8-year-old will sometimes just start crying.
Mm.
You know?
It sounds like you give her space to do that.
Oh yeah.
Like you know,
and that was something my wife taught me, honestly, last year, knowing, you know, considering how sick she was and knowing that time was short, you know, didn't know how short, didn't know months or years, but, that's something that she worked on with me, honestly, because she could see that I wasn't that type of person to give myself the kind of space necessary, let alone my daughter's the kind of space necessary to grieve and just be in our feelings and just sink into it. You know, I was always the one who when sad or in an uncomfortable situation or something like that, crack a joke or, you know, find a distraction. And, you know, so last year really helped with that. And it's really paid off these last few months, you know, just kind of, you know, getting in my feelings and not having a problem with it, you know, just sinking into it. It's been really interesting. And by the way, the girls are hanging out downstairs with grandma. Is what they're doing.
Okay. Yeah.
To answer the other part where I thought maybe you said where. They're hanging out with grandma. I said, Daddy's going into Studio C. I called this Studio C. It's C for closet. Daddy's going into Studio C to record a podcast. I'll be back in about an hour or so, give or take.
Yeah. I have to remember to schedule recordings during the least, how should I put it? Like the least risky moments of the day. Like, because there are moments during the day and during the week, high risk for dogs barking, you know, like, so I got to remember to schedule around the high risk dog barking moments.
Yeah. So I don't schedule anything in the mornings. I initially scheduled a few things in the mornings and it just doesn't work that way with the girls going to school, you know, on their computers downstairs. So I just sit right in the middle of them with my computer and I do my grading and other things like that for school. But, afternoons are like prime time, like one to four, 1 to 5. It's really, really kind of a good time for me. They're hanging out. Maybe they're on an iPad or something like that, playing video games with a cousin, you know, FaceTiming or whatever. So it's kind of cool.
How is this project going? Is it, have you had good guests on yet or?
Well, I was going to crack a joke, but I'm
no. Not a single one.
No. Not... Yeah. I don't know. You're my first, so I'll tell you after we're done. No.
I didn't realize that.
No, I've talked to a few people, and this is actually one of the things that comes with the grieving process, in that I used to be able to do 3, 4, 5, 6 podcast chats a week on top of an 8 to 10 hour a day work day, you know? And I'd be fine. I'd just power through, whether it was coffee or just pure adrenaline. Yeah. I would just power through. And I can't do that anymore. I can't. So like last week, for example, I scheduled and conducted 4 podcast chats on top of conducting, you know, the school time for the girls. And I had a couple of meetings for CSUN before our semester started. And it was just too much. It was just too much. So yeah. I've done a few. I think, you know, I think they turned out okay. I switched mics in between chats 2 and 3. So I haven't listened to any of them other than what I was listening to in the monitor as I was going. And I just kind of have to trust that God's going to take care of it, and God will give me the energy and the mental and emotional capacity over the next couple of weeks to edit those, launch those, and then we're good.
Editing do you do? Is it just for like those sorts of things? Or do you like content editing?
I rarely do content editing. Sometimes a guest will ask me when I'm done, look at you turning into the interviewer. That was really well done by you. Sometimes I'll edit some content. If, say, for example, it's maybe a longer episode and I felt like maybe it dragged in the middle because I asked a question that I probably shouldn't have asked, not because the content was salacious or something, but it's like, you know, what's your favorite color of paint? You know, it's just something random that I threw in there because my mind went blank.
Yeah.
And I'll rarely edit for content though. Most of the time I will edit out my ums and ahs and stutters and stops. And the guest almost always doesn't have any of that I need to touch.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I just try to, because they're just thinking off the top of their head, answering a question, answering a prompt. I'm trying to figure out the prompt in my head as I go. I try to do as much research as I can ahead of time without taking so many notes that I'm just bogged down in those notes. And I don't deviate from them, and I don't deviate from those questions. Like maybe there's 2 or 3 things that I absolutely want to ask, but the rest of it is just you and me having a conversation, and it goes where it goes. I've got a couple of things that I can kind of fall back on.
Yeah.
And in doing so, that's when I end up with the starts and stops, and I'll get 10 seconds into a question and I'll be like, well, you know what? I didn't really phrase that right. Let me go back.
Right.
And or checking the sound quality from this microphone that I'm using today, on a previous conversation, I asked a 70-second question.
I'll totally do that.
Oh,
I'll go off for like 3 minutes.
Yeah. And I didn't listen for that content yet. I haven't edited the whole thing. This was just for the audio quality, but I'm going to listen back and I bet you I can get that 70-second question down to about 12, seconds, because it's all just fluff and bullshit before we even get to the nut of it.
So, yeah. It's interesting. I haven't had any formal training in this thing. I haven't even had formal training in interviewing people. So but when we get guests, I feel like I'm doing them a disservice if I don't do a proper amount of research and come in with, you know, twice as much material as we would need.
Yep.
You know, and to be conversant in their careers and in their work. So, yeah. So next week we actually have 4 recordings for one of the programs, the Talk of Politics and Religion program.
Yeah.
I got a lot of reading to do. A lot of, you know, the funny thing is that if you get about 5 or 6 good topics/questions, that can easily fill an hour.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
absolutely.
But so I'm still toying. Certain guests are definitely more interview style, but there are others, especially when my dad is my part-time co-host.
Oh, that's cool.
It creates an interesting dynamic.
That is cool. I assume you approached him considering the medium that you're working with, the platform.
Yeah.
But how did that conversation go?
So the program itself is an outgrowth of a lot of conversations he and I have been having for about 20 years. Because I grew up in an observant Jewish household, New York Jewish household, which is a very specific breed of, of Jews. But when I was in my late 20s, I became a Christian, like not just like, oh, we're going to church on Easter. I'm like full on Bible thumping, born again, hallelujah Christian. You know, when I told my dad, it was around Thanksgiving of 2000. Yeah. So it was almost exactly 20 years ago. He had a very clinical reaction to it. Didn't really react at first. I could tell he was upset and shaken. About a month later, I get this 10-page single-spaced letter from my dad telling me all the reasons why I shouldn't be a Christian.
Oh.
And it was just like historical reasons, filial obligation reasons, emotional reasons.
Yeah.
He just hit me from every angle. And he's a pretty learned, erudite guy. So I started responding paragraph by paragraph. And, you know, later on, there was a lot of healing in our relationship. And part of that, we're just having, you know, have a little bit of bourbon, have a cigar. We don't really smoke cigars too much anymore. But, you know, that sort of thing, just kind of chill and talk.
Yeah.
And then on occasion, somebody else would join us. For example, one of his best friends now is a guy named, I can say it. A guy named Mike Gaston, who was one of the pastors at my church.
Okay.
And my dad and Mike are like Mutt and Jeff. Mike is, you know, 6'3", 6'4". My dad's 5'6" on a good day when the wind's blowing right. You know, my dad is very liberal in his political views, Jewish. Mike is very conservative in his political views, Christian. But they've become best of friends. And it was born out of one of these conversations that my dad and I were having. I don't even know what we were talking about. It could have been theology. It could have been politics. It could have been anything. It could have been the Mets. You know, Mike likes to give us a lot of crap about.
Hey, that is a ripe tree to pick from.
Yeah. You know something? I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, Lindor is going to throw out his back and never be the same again. He's going to be a 230 hitter and not have the range to play shortstop. You know, DeGrom, like just, you know, they replaced the Dodgers in more ways than one in that regard. But anyway, so I've always been passionate about a few different things, especially the intersection of politics and religion. And I thought, you know, it would be fun. It would be fun if I included my dad in these conversations because, you know, our views sort of complement each other as well. So when we get any given guest on, it makes for an interesting mix. So, yeah.
How long ago did you start the podcast? How many
this
episodes
are you
in? This is
a baby one. So we just started in October. But but we're seeing some nice results. We had we've had a nice diverse range of guests. Next week we're getting, knock on wood, he just confirmed this morning, but his schedule is like he can get called into MSNBC. So Charlie Sykes just
nice.
Confirmed.
Nice.
Anna Palmer, who just started, she's from Politico and just started Punch Bowl Media. So she's coming on. We're getting the country's leading expert in domestic terrorism, a professor at USC, he was a special agent in FBI and part of the Obama administration, part of Schwarzenegger's admin too, here in California. So we're getting some really exciting. Kurt Bardella said he's willing to come on, but we haven't scheduled it yet. So yeah, we got some cool things ahead of us.
What was the process to put that together, considering it's very different from the podcast you have been doing?
Yeah. Well, again, it required me to do a great deal more research for any guest. It also requires me to go way outside my comfort zone and relationship zone. There were some people that we knew that were in our circle of influence. We happened to know, for example, a lead economist at the World Bank. So he was talking about, you know, policy in times of COVID, relevant issues. We happen to know a few people just in our circle, but, starting to reach out to people like Julie Mason, who was on, she recorded right before Christmas and we released it on January 3rd. She doesn't know me from Adam, you know, but right. I reached out to her and, she was gracious enough to, you know, email me back and, you know, I didn't make a complete fool of myself because she still, you know, she shared the episode and stuff. So, so it just required me to do probably 3, 4, 5 times as much research to come in really prepared. Whereas in the trailer world, I know those people. I know their biographies. I know those stories. You know, and frankly, as a headhunter, you're doing a version of these conversations, or I'd been doing a version of these conversations for the better part of 20 years. Not to say that I don't prepare for any interview because I need to take a closer look at their body of work and stuff like that. But, I am in an avocational zone with politics and religion. You know, theology is a passion of mine. Politics is a passion of mine that I devour, but it's not my vocation. It's not my expert. I don't have a doctorate. I don't have a PhD in philosophy. So it does require a lot more prep from a episode to episode basis. But the hardest part I thought, which I've been really, really encouraged, is I thought that, you know, Corey Nathan / Joe Schmo from Santa Clarita, California, why the hell would Charlie Sykes come on my show? But I just decided to reach out to folks and say, hey, I'm, you know, just like try to be real about it. Like with Charlie, I just said he's been kind of a mentor of mine, just, you know, from afar, and told him what the idea of the program is, that we're trying to stake out some ground in the public sphere to have different sorts of conversations where it's not about contentiousness, where it's not about people all agreeing with each other about how much they hate this figure or that person, you know, but folks who have different points of view, but disagreeing well in edifying ways, you know? And so I just kind of shoot that out to folks, and yeah, I've been really, I've just been blown away, man. Some of the people that email me back, I'm like, don't you know who, like, it's the opposite end of don't you know who I am? Don't you know who I am? Like, you have no business replying to me.
You're like, if I knew it was going to be this easy to kind of shoot my shot, I would have been shooting my shot for, you know, 30 years now.
Seriously. Yeah, absolutely.
So let's go back, because I really want to kind of explore that dynamic with your dad. Obviously, you mentioned he's a co-host now on your
sometime
podcast.
Co-host.
Yeah.
So, sometimes I have to put him on the bench. He's,
Let's go back to that 10-page single-spaced letter that he sent you. How long did it take for you to then put pen to paper yourself in reply? And how long do you feel like it took for you to heal that relationship together?
You really want to make me cry, don't you?
I haven't done it on this podcast yet, but if you want to be the first, please, by all means.
So I did take some time with the first response, because it was literally just the first paragraph that I was responding to, and it required me to do some research. And it was a different sort of research at the time. My approach was much more pure debate style. Like, I'm doing research in order to refute all of his points, which I don't think is a really, it's not the way that I would approach it now. Nor is it the way that we approached our conversations with each other, even, 2 years after that. But I did enough research to be able to respond to him with as much empirical, or academic responses. And that, whether it was a week after I got the letter or a month after I got the letter, but it was just one paragraph of a 10-page single-spaced letter. So my intention was to go paragraph by paragraph doing the same thing. And I knew it was going to be at least a year, if not a 2-year project, just to answer that initial letter. What would happen was, when I would send him one, he would respond.
Oh, no.
And then I'd have to respond to what he responded to. So we had these, like, all of these different threads going, if you will. And in the meantime, he was still living full time on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And he would only come out for visits. Now they live here 6 months out of the year. They're retired. They both my parents worked for the New York City school system their whole careers. So they are out here about 6 months out of the year now, but they didn't move out here until when, like 2008, 2009 or so. So it was like a 10-year period where he would come out for a visit. I would make a point of getting together with friends while they were out here so that he could hang out with this, this Christian friend or my pastor buddy,
right,
or, something like that.
To humanize it, if you will.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it was a process. I think when the ice really broke was when we have a girl and two boys. Savannah was born in March of 2001, and then Jackie Boy was born in July of 2003. So by the time Jackie Boy was born, we had determined that we were going to continue observing certain Jewish traditions. And even rituals, because I thought that didn't betray my theological convictions as a Christian. One of them is what's called a bris, which is this ritual circumcision of male children. And it really did something to further heal a relationship that was already somewhat on the mend, but was still pretty icy, because it was really important to my father. The hardest thing about me becoming a Christian for my father is that it was somehow, to him, it was somehow putting our family to death. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, he took it personally. He took it as, you are rejecting what our family has given to you, has been through, has lived through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might sound harsh, but my father's generation and my grandparents' generation, becoming a Christian is doing what Hitler tried to do. Hitler tried to put the Jewish people to death completely. He tried to end the Jewish people. So by becoming a Christian, that's finishing the job. And again, it sounds harsh, but so much about being a Jew is the survival of Judaism. So I don't think he sees it that way anymore. In fact, I know he doesn't see it that way anymore, partly because of some of the choices that we've made, that I can't, just because I believe in a Messiah that, you know, non-Christian Jewish people don't believe in it. I can't stop being Jewish any more than, I don't know, I'm trying to think of it, then I'm a righty. Like I can't really, right. That doesn't change. There are right. certain things that don't change. So yeah, when we decided to have a bris for the boys, and give my father a position of honor in the ceremony, it was something that really cut deep in all the right ways. And it, over the years, our relationship has become more enriched because of our differences. And I think in some ways, like, listen, we can't solve all the problems of the world, but we can be a part of some of those great problems, you know, we can be a part of the solution in our little world. You know what I mean? Like, those were life and death conversations that we were having. In fact, it went beyond life and death, because he was talking about generations. He was speaking for his father and grandfather, great grandfather before him, because he knew those stories and he saw it as his responsibility to continue that story. And I was aware of that too. I was aware of symbolically what I was doing to that line. I was aware of how the sacrifices that they made, that my great grandparents and great great grandparents made in order to continue being Jews. You know, I knew what turmoil, what peril they were in on a day-to-day basis, for no other reason than they were Jews, that there were any number of peoples around them, the Cossacks, the Bolsheviks, the Nazis a little bit later, that none of them could agree on anything except they all hated the Jews, right? So I was aware of those dynamics. And if my father and I could find not just an agree to disagree stasis, but like loving each other, continuing to enrich each other's lives, and somehow figure out how to continue the story of our family that honored our family. That's doing, in Hebrew, it's called tikkun olam. That's doing the work of tikkun olam. You know, we're not solving all the world's problems, but we're solving this part of the world right here. You know what I mean? So I'm getting probably too...
No, we just let it breathe, man. We just let it breathe. I love it. I really love it. And I as you're talking, I'm thinking about different ways that we can take this conversation. And I'm curious, a couple things. You haven't mentioned your mom yet. How does she come down on all this? How was that initial conversation with... Like you said,
I haven't started drinking yet today. You brought up my mother. She's a Jewish mother from New York.
Well, see, and you, which is probably why you haven't mentioned her yet.
Oh my God.
So what was that conversation like when you had to tell both mom and dad, hey, by the way?
So I had the talk with my father first. We were out on the front porch.
It's a good idea.
And then it was like a 2-hour talk. And, my dad said, so, you know, you're going to have to tell your mother. I'm like, I was hoping that you'd tell her. He said, put your big boy pants on and go tell your mother. So I went inside. I told Phyllis, and she didn't really respond at first. I just rolled out with it. It was kind of one of those things where it's kind of like, you don't want to, when a tragedy happens, you don't want to beat around the bush. Just say, give it to me straight.
Right.
You know? So I just figured I got to tell her straight. So I said, Mom, I don't know how to tell you this. I'm a Christian now. I'm a born again Christian now. And she she was typing on her computer and she didn't really stop, but her hands like came off the keyboard and it was like they were still typing. And she sort of floated into the other room. She had like the glazed look in her eyes. And I go, I followed her into the other room. I said, Mom, I don't know if you heard me. I'm a Christian now. And she leaned up against her dresser and she said, "I'm sorry. I just never thought I'd have a son." And she was like looking for the words, "Who was walking with Jesus?" And then she yelled into the other room. She goes, "Ronnie, du hast," which is Yiddish for did you hear? "Ronnie, did you hear? Did du hast? Corey's a born again Republican now." Like, I didn't say it. I just said I'm a Christian. I didn't say, like,
and hence talking religion and politics
was born.
Yeah.
Was born. Yeah. Wow. That's right.
Wow. If only we could have recorded that initially, then you'd have your open. You'd have your podcast open. No problem.
It was pre-iPhone. Well, so my pops and I are recording. I did a little intro, like just a 10-minute intro to what the program is. And then the next episode was the first one that Ronnie was on. My dad was on. And it's called A Jew from Jersey Becomes a Christian. Oi! So we kind of shared that story on the first episode. Well, about halfway through our conversation, where my pops and I are really getting into it, Phyllis walks in. She sees that my dad is on the headphones and we're doing the thing. And she just doesn't matter. She "Ronnie, did you get the subscription?" Like, so I canceled the, like, "Mom, you know, we're doing this thing." She doesn't care. I left it on. I didn't edit that out. I just left that whole interaction on.
That's the way to do it. That relationship that you talked about with your dad is one thing where, you know, you have these hours long talks with him. You have this letter writing back and forth that goes years. But then when it's your mom, it's like, "Heh." And then it's just move on to the next, you know?
Right.
It's really kind of interesting, that whole dynamic.
There's a lot of sitcoms that have been made about similar dynamics. we're convinced every time we see Everybody Loves Raymond, we're convinced that character, the mother character, is based on my mother.
Somehow, they got a hold of Phyllis's security tapes or something.
It's uncanny.
You're now raising your three kids, you know, in a Christian household. What do you take from your upbringing in that Jewish household and still make sure that that your kids get that, regardless, religion or otherwise, in your house?
Well, there are moments throughout every year and moments to mark certain times of life, like a bris or, you know, deaths in the family or weddings or what have you. But also just throughout the year, like, we still observe Passover. In the Jewish tradition, you read what's called the Haggadah and you retell the story of Passover in a fun, kid-friendly way. So we still do stuff like that. You know, we go over to grandma and grandpa's and light Hanukkah candles. All the kids have gone to, like, the Purim festival. So there are these moments throughout every year that we mark time together, you know, and all of that is significant. It's like the together part of it and the us part of it. This is what we do. So that's something that's carried over from my childhood, but there are obviously significant differences. You know, my wife didn't grow up. She grew up in Alabama. So, you know, when I told my grandfather I met a girl and she's really special in Alabama, his first question, "Is she Jewish?" I'm like, "Yeah, Zayda, I met the Jew in Alabama."
You know, like, the one.
They ended up really liking her. I remember the first time they met her, she came up during Christmas time that year that we met, 1993. And we spent the whole afternoon with my grandparents. We called them Baba and Zayda, which is also Yiddish. So my grandfather's walking me out and he puts his arm around me and walks ahead of the girls. And he says, "Koa, I love her. She's wonderful. She's beautiful. What the hell is she doing with you?"
That's so, how you knew.
But yeah, so she didn't grow up obviously in a Jewish household. So, you know, we we have traditions from her, what she learned from her grannies,
right?
You know, Granny Mac and Granny Beach, you know, but it makes it uniquely us.
Wanted to ask also, kind of going with what we were talking about a few minutes ago, the idea that you're telling your parents that you're born again Christian, you have affected them greatly. You have deeply impacted their lives to the point where, like you said, your dad is writing you a 10-page single space letter to tell you why you're wrong. And this, was there ever a thought to rescind or renounce your decision, considering how much it impacted your parents?
No, that, I knew in advance what I was sacrificing. I was sacrificing the possibility that I would be rejected by my parents and perhaps never talk to them again. But I felt such a deep theological conviction. And it wasn't something that I came to lightly, obviously. There were a lot of other decisions I could have made philosophically, religiously, political. Like, there are so many other things I could have came home and said that would have been embraced, or at least, you know, they might have been annoyed, but it was like, whatever. Okay.
Right.
But this one was arguably the worst thing I could have said to them. So I knew what I was potentially sacrificing in advance, nothing that my parents did. I've never, since I came to that conclusion, there are core beliefs that I haven't questioned, just because I arrived at a certain truth that just made sense to me. Answers to basic existential questions made sense to me. Not that I couldn't, I'm a truth seeker. So at the end of the day, there might be some new information that arises that just completely blows all that away. But it's one of those things, like the sun rises in the east. It would take a great deal for some of these fundamental things. Now, some of the secondary and tertiary things, I've started to peel away. Some of the Christian-y things really piss me off, and I've rejected, because there are other accoutrements that go along with American evangelicalism that are bullshit, and I think are doing. Am I allowed to curse on this?
You are absolutely allowed and encouraged.
Yeah, I'm a Bible thumper who curses, drinks, and plays poker. So we're just gonna have to
roll just deal with it.
Yeah,
And hangs out with his Jewish parents.
Yeah. In fact, so there's a lot of things that I've rejected about some of the subcultures of folks who are calling themselves Christians, but not the idea that this Jesus guy lived and died and rose again. You know, that, like, some of those either ors propositions in the Bible, I believe it. And not to get into like the gospel story, but or you know, into that too deeply, but like I said, I had some very fundamental questions, existential questions, and some of the ways that theologically and philosophically they were answered, I haven't found a more coherent, cohesive set of answers yet.
Why don't you tell people where they can find you, how they can contact you?
Thanks for asking. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. It's Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other. And talking is with an apostrophe, and killing is with an apostrophe. And that's, we're on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, just about any platform, iHeart. Yeah, you should be able to find us.
I've put all of Corey's links in the show notes, including the link to my episode of Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other. All my links are at aaronbender.com. Thank you so much for listening. Would love a subscribe, rate, review, and share while you're here. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.